Hour number three, Darren, Donick, and Chase on this Monday afternoon, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Sunny, beautiful day here in Music City. Darren McFarland, that's me, down here on the south side of town in Smyrna. Willie Donick holding fort in East Nashville. Chase McCabe out on the west side in Bellevue. Marquise Munson back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, which is also known as our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Vince Ferrara at Vince Sports on Twitter is how you give him a follow. He's with the Sports Animal, WNML, there in Knoxville. Vinny, how you doing? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was productive. You know, just like a lot of other people, some organizing and cleanup, clutter removal projects, and you know, a little bit of work mixed in. You know how it is these days, work and home life. It was always a blend for me anyway, but now it's just a 24/7 blend, and that's the case for a lot of people where you think of something you got to do, you jump on the computer and you get to a project and oh, you got to send this email out and things like that. So, but it was productive. Weather overall was nice, and you know, ditto for the current weather right now. Clear blue skies, sunny, decent temperature. So yeah, hanging in there.
Did you get a chance to watch The Last Dance last night?
I DVR'd it, and I'm going to watch those two headed into 3 and 4. So, yeah, I've seen some people, you know, react to it. But, yeah, it's a must-watch. I just haven't done it yet. I'll do that headed into 3 and 4.
We had a really good conversation with Laura Rutledge from ESPN in the first hour of today's show. And, of course, talking to her about college football, and you know, a lot's happened, hard to believe, or at least a lot's been talked about and discussed. Not a lot's really happened, but a lot has been discussed and thrown out there since our last conversation with you just a week ago. A lot of differing opinions of how they're going to try to get this college football season in. We know how vitally important it is. We talked about Philip Fulmer's appearance on Paul Feinbaum's show, where he threw out that basically UT's football program is good for $100 million a year, which is 67% of the budget, the athletic budget, and how vitally important it is. And other ADs have talked about how their football program is responsible for more than 67% of their athletic budget. So we know how critical it is for them to play this season, when and how. So what has changed for you, and where are you on all this a week later from last week's conversation?
Well, it's certainly the, you know, I was at first reluctant to get into the are we going to have football conversation. I didn't, just mentally trying to get through and process the early part of this quarantine world that we've been in now. So it was tough at first to go there. Now we're getting so many reactions. It's part of what we do, and having to ask those that are connected and listen and read to try to be more informed on how this would happen. It's something we can't avoid. I'm convinced that we're going to have football at some point. And it's especially important, from a mental health standpoint for this country, and certainly from a business standpoint, as you alluded to in your question as well. College football, a lot more complicated than the NFL. There's certainly politics that are going to be involved in both sides and who you have to deal with. But, you know, so there's just so many more things that are hurdles for college football, and because you can't put the players in harm's way, I think, you know, it makes it tougher to start to envision it starting on time and like normal, or both for sure is the toughest to really see. And Lane Kiffin, who was on our station, our afternoon show, I think at the beginning of last week, he mentioned something. It might have been Monday afternoon after I talked to you guys. He was asked, well, what do you think about the topic and the possibility of having no fans? And he said, I think it's a waste of time to even talk about. He said, if you think about it, as big as the rosters are and for both sides, and then all of the staff and the personnel it takes to operate, plus broadcasting and all that, you're going to have hundreds of people there. Well, if we're in a similar situation and or it's not safe for the fans to be there, why would it be safe for several hundred people to be there and then the contact as well? So I think it's a very good point, and it makes it more difficult to really envision them having that option that, say, a Major League Baseball or some other sports, an MMA, might be able to execute basketball, might be able to execute and figure that out better than a football. So it's, you know, the delay and or altering of a season is more of a reality. And even Chris Fowler, I thought he made some great points in his Instagram video he put out, and just educated speculation. He said he has talked to people that, and you guys may have talked about it, he had talked to people that are the ones in sort of the planning scenario stages, not the decision makers. And he thinks that even starting in the spring, although there'd be complications with that, that that's a scenario as well. Either starting on time like normal, having a shortened, altered season, maybe starting a little bit late, or starting in the spring are the three big scenarios that they're looking at. And so he thinks that something has to be decided by the end of May on what they're doing. So, yeah, it's more of a reality now to discuss. Even Greg Sankey was on our station last week, and, you know, he wouldn't come out and just take a strong stance on it. But I think you kind of felt like, hey, we, you know, we're starting to look at football a little bit more in terms of what are more of our options. And, you know, it's something that now I think of, you know, more than a month in, you have to process and you have to start looking at it more seriously that we could have changes to the football season.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm not the final decision maker on that, because, I mean, there's just so many hurdles for any option. I mean, there's spring to me becomes incredibly tricky. One, is there a vaccine by then? How much do we know by then? If there's not, that's in the middle of still flu season. How would that be any better than September and October and August and any of those, the warmer months? A guy like Trevor Lawrence, so what, he's going to play his college football season and wrap up and then get drafted the next week? I mean, that, how does that work? Will players just that are going to their final year say, yeah, I'm not playing in the spring. I'm just going to go on and worry about my NFL career and sit out? I mean, there's all kinds of – and is it just safe to have two football seasons in the same calendar year? You know, and there's that whole aspect, so – It's not easy. Either way you slice it, I just think the whole spring thing that's been thrown out there is incredibly tricky to get around unless we have a whole lot of answers by then.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing there is, you mentioned it, is the possibility of a vaccine by that point. And that's something that Chris Fowler mentioned in his video. And what the consideration for maybe starting the season late, is there some that think we could see a second wave of this when the temperatures start to fall again? So do you start a season and then have to stop it? And, you know, everything that comes with that. So I think that's where the thought process would be, is we can't risk that it coming back and starting back a second time. I mean, we're not doctors. I don't know how it's going to play out or how quickly we can get the medical part of it settled. But you're right, when you're dealing with health of fans, of student athletes, and then you're dealing with people pulling on you from all different directions, and then what about TV? Are the networks going to put pressure on these sports to come back quicker, to come back in some specific form? You know, because they have to deal with the financial aspect of it as well. So, yeah, it is very, very hard. And hopefully we'll get something at some point is kind of the way I'm looking at it.
I just hope, honestly, Vince, and I've talked about so much on this show, I just hope we don't talk about, and I know we are, it's going to happen. I just hope that we're not talking about the fallout from a no season, a shortened season, you know, what the impact will be. I just hope that we're not having that conversation. I suspect there's going to be a fallout. We've already seen it. I mean, Cincinnati's already said men's soccer is going away. That is just the tip of what I believe will be the iceberg if they don't, if they don't play this season. I think it'll be, I don't even know what sports survive, not named football or hoops. You know, maybe some baseball programs, but I hope we're not having that conversation. But I know these are all the tough things they're having to discuss in a room.
There's no doubt. You've seen it, cutbacks. I mean, PFL, the Pro Fighters League, today already announced suspending their season. And, you know, WWE laying off a bunch of people, and they're a billion-dollar organization. So if those companies are having to furlough and cut people, you know that schools are going to have to make those tough decisions. Media outlets, too. How's covering a lot of these sports going to be for a lot of us in sports broadcasting? Just don't know. Just got to try to make the most of it, while you're in your situation, and stay positive and be ready whenever stuff happens. It's just sad that it's going to continue to impact a whole lot of people.
Yep, already has. We'll come back more with Vince Ferrara on the other side, talking all things Vols with him from the Sports Animal there in Knoxville. Willie, why don't you give us a word about the good folks at Lee Company?
All right, let's give you a word about Lee Company, 615-567-1000. As I've been saying for the last couple of weeks, where we go through this period of time, as we do every year, where the temperature fluctuates, some nights it can get down into the 30s or the 40s, and you're still running your heat. And now we have some days where the temperature creeps up into the high 70s, maybe even clipping 80. And it reminds you that the air conditioner is very, very important in your household these days. So if either one of them have not been running efficiently, it's a great incentive, if you will, to call Lee Company and get involved with them, 615-567-1000. They do great work with their home maintenance plan. And if you get on the home maintenance plan, then you're going to be set. You won't even have to listen to this commercial, because you will get the calls every year from Lee Company four times a year to come in and set up an appointment to check out your heating, your air conditioning, your plumbing, and your electric. Every year, four times a year, once for each of those services, and they will make sure everything's running properly. If it's not, they'll make recommendations, and you'll get discounts on repairs that need to be made. Check out that home maintenance plan for Lee Company, 615-567-1000, or go online at leecompany.com. It's a great service. We've used it in our house for years. Lee Company, let their decades of expertise go to work for you. Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, coming at you once again. Vince Ferrara, his weekly visit with us, as he does every Monday. We're talking University of Tennessee, and so we're going to hit on a couple of things this segment, the recruiting and then the draft. Vince has been doing some excellent work on both of these fronts. And so, Vince, if you will, kind of help us understand how the recruiting process is working right now with this environment that we're in.
Well, it's a lot of communication remotely and just with technology. I mean, the discussion of future visits are happening, and when everything's settled, maybe later in the summer you can come visit our campus, things like that. The offers are still going out. It's different because this UT staff, they have really relied a lot upon those camps, and maybe holding off on offering kids just on their high school tape because they want to see them in their camp settings. So those have been very useful for Jeremy Pruitt and his staff in the past, and obviously you can't have those. So it's really changing the way they're having to operate. But It's probably spending even more time evaluating tape. It's researching players through back channels, maybe even more than you would when you are evaluating them as players, whether it's the camps or their tapes, things like that. You're spending even more time on doing some of the networking type of thing. And then obviously all the Zoom video calls that you can have, that communication. It's tough to tell with young adults that are players coming out of college, going to the NFL, and judging them and their mannerisms for the draft, much less teenagers. I think it is,
especially teenagers,
sure,
who right now have a challenge to say self-motivated, right? They don't have the structure that they're probably used to right now with their spring training and or maybe even playing spring sports or getting ready for 7-on-7. All of these things have been disrupted. So I wonder what factor that has on some of the kids and how the coaches evaluate them.
I think it can be an indicator, Willie. I think you can find out, all right, who really loves football? You ask a kid what he's doing, and he's like, just kind of, run around the neighborhood and play video games. Really? Okay. So that's what you're doing in terms of football? Where others that love it, especially quarterbacks and some kids have been they've been playing football since a young age, and they're wired that way, and they crave it and love it and enjoy it. So they're finding other ways to get in work. If you can communicate that and they believe, and the coaches believe you, whereas another kid at the same position, maybe similarly rated, isn't doing the work, and you can kind of tell that, hey, he's just not doing anything right now, unless he has circumstances that prevent him from doing everything else. In doing the workouts, if he's got something in some sort of restriction, family, home situation, things like that, you take those into consideration. But I think it can be a way to differentiate kids and finding out what they're doing and who really loves the sport, because that's something that coaches always talk about. This kid loves football and he's a winner. And these may be ways, while coaches are adjusting, these may be ways to sort of change their evaluation of kids. But Tennessee's still done a nice job in bringing in kids and adding to their class.
If you follow college football closely, you probably were aware of all of the craziness that happened at the quarterback position last year at USC. Some injuries, different guys getting to play, and as a result, five-star quarterback JT Daniels is going to transfer. And I guess Tennessee is on the radar, right, Vince?
Yeah, 24/7 put Tennessee on their list of teams that could be a good fit for JT Daniels. And he's a former five-star. You mentioned he had a lot of different quarterbacks played there at USC, and he's decided to move on. There's five scholarship quarterbacks already here at UT, including a true freshman quarterback in Harrison Bailey, who some fans can't wait to see on the field. And I'm sure he came thinking he had a chance to compete for the job, and I'm sure he still will. But, you added a second freshman quarterback as well, plus you have Maurer and Trout, and then obviously in returning starter, Jerry Garantano. You're going to add a sixth scholarship quarterback to the mix. Look, there's the relationship with T. Martin there from his time at USC, but I don't know for either side that this is the best way to go. It would be surprising for me if Tennessee went that route. I think they're probably already over the scholarship limit. They are over the scholarship limit, so there's going to need to be attrition anyway. So I don't know that that's what will be the best fit for him and for UT right now.
We're talking to Vince Ferrara, the sports animal, WNML, in Knoxville. So I was looking through your mock draft that I know that you did, your final mock NFL draft, and I find it interesting that you don't have Jordan Love in the first round and you have a run on receivers as well. What were some of the things that went into your draft?
Well, as far as Jordan Love, I did not do trades in my mock draft. Some people do, some people don't. I think those things are so difficult to predict, and then you start, you change one thing and it screws four of your picks up. So, you know, some years, like last year, I think there were 8 first round trades. 2 years ago, there were 20. So you just never know how those things. Oh, by the way, we have this uncharted territory and new circumstances with the remote virtual draft this year that I just left that alone. So there's not a lot of teams that really have that need. And some of the teams that you can make a case for drafting their quarterback of the future, I think the winning now would be more important to them in those spots. I think someone will do that and will trade into the first round if he does slip and go get him. I just didn't factor that in into the draft. So I did not have him in my first round because I think there's other needs, and then that's too big of a risk for some of those teams that want to try to win now. As far as the receivers, I have 7 in the first round. You could probably make cases for others that weren't in that first round, like a Jalen Reagor at TCU and others. But that would tie a record 2004 for most wide receivers in a draft. I also have 6 LSU players, and that would tie a record for most first-rounders from one school in a year, tying the U also back in 2004. LSU is loaded. And there, and then obviously SEC as well. I think you will see the SEC obliterate that record. I think it's 12 or 13 is the most for first-rounders from one conference. So I think you'll see the SEC pass that, and you could get into 15, 16 or more as well. So during this draft, I think you're going to rely on more of the known commodities, especially later in the draft. But those are a couple of things. And the whole Herbert is safer than Tua stuff to me is so ridiculous. As if there's no risk in Justin Herbert. Look, great kid, incredibly smart, clean, measurable. I get all that. But he was inconsistent in his time at Oregon. And Tua is a special player. And so, yeah, there's the health question. But if he's healthy, I have zero question that he's going to be a special player. Healthy, Justin Herbert, I have that question. So there's still risk there. And if you look, there's been 30 first-round quarterbacks taken since the 2010 draft. And a couple of those in the last couple of years, we still need to see how they play out. But I'd say the NFL is hitting at about a third of those first-round quarterbacks. I'm going to go with what I know. And to me, Burrow and Tua are on a different level, and there are sure things in this draft. And I'd rather take that risk than whether this guy can play in the league or not.
How did you decide on defensive tackle Ross Blacklock from TCU as the Titans pick at 29?
Well, the 1.0 a couple of weeks ago, I had Justin Matabuike from Texas A&M, and I really like him as well, and I almost still put him there. You know, just to be different and because I think he would be a good fit for the Titans. However, I had Ross Blacklock already off the board at that time. In this scenario, I had Blacklock available for the Titans, and I think the way analysts talk about Blacklock, that I think both of those guys would be really good fits and very similar in terms of their measurables and their athleticism and their playmaking. But I think Blacklock, with his first step and his productivity, I think, would be over a longer period of time, would probably be the pick. But he's also been injured numerous times, so we'll see how that impacts him. So that's why I went with him. I think I wanted to go, after talking to Mike Keith, I wanted to go corner because that was the first position that Mike mentioned, and he's been in, talked to John Robinson and Mike Vrabel and a lot of those guys that have been doing the work in the building. I think corners where if they have a special guy there, they'd like to go. But I had a lot of those top corners already off the board at that time. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Titans do trade back because of the value at that position. And so I didn't factor the trades in. So I left them there with sort of best player available. to them at a need position. They don't have to do anything at 29 to address one position. They can maneuver around and get the players they like. So that's how I settled. Instead of corner, I settled on Ross Blacklock, who I think certainly fills a need. I know they have Jeffrey Simmons and Daquan Jones, but I still think that you need to line him up next to Simmons and really be good moving forward.
Daniel Jeremiah had Daryl Taylor from Tennessee is a player that can move up the draft boards, go a little higher than people thought. Where do you see him going, and then how many other UT players do you think get drafted?
I think the highest you would see Taylor would be mid to late second round, maybe sneaking into the bottom part of the second round. There's certainly a lot of teams that need edge rushers. There's not a lot of them in this draft, and honestly, there's not a lot of them that have his upside and his ability, because he is a terrific athlete, and he's scheme versatile. So I think that maybe bumps his value up. Jeremiah said that I really like Jeremiah. I think out of the draft, current draft analysts, I think he's the best. He said that he listed four players that would be, after he talked to a bunch of GMs, would be taken higher than what a lot of people anticipate. So I think, you know, Vikings, Raiders, there's just a lot of teams that need edge rush help, and especially if you didn't address that need in your first round pick, you know, maybe get him in the second round. I think he'll go second or third is what I anticipate. I would be surprised if he falls farther than that. I think Juwan James would have drafted, but I'm starting to see now some mock drafts, seven-round mocks. I think Chad Reuter did one. He didn't have Jennings drafted at all. So I think this has been tough for Juwan Jennings during this process. Doesn't mean that if one team really loves him and is giggling, you know, privately in their homes, that they won't take him somewhere in the mid to late rounds. I do think, will get drafted. And then probably one more, either Marquez Callaway or Daniel Batuli. I think one of those two might give a slight edge to Callaway, but they both have some value and special teams ability as well. So I'll say three with Taylor and Jennings for sure.
Enjoyed your draft preview on wide receivers. Speaking of some of the Juwan Jennings and that you brought up there with D-Mace, I enjoyed that conversation. Thanks for the visit as always. Have a great week. And we will talk to you next Monday after the draft.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. And you guys stay safe and healthy out there.
Same to you. Vince Ferraro, the sports animal, at Vince Sports on Twitter, WNML in Knoxville. We'll come back and hear some from the head coach and the general manager of the Titans next on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll talk with TD, Teron Davenport from ESPN, NFL Nation reporter for the Titans, also his podcast, Talking with TD. That's to kick off the fourth and final hour of today's show. But first, Titans general manager John Robinson and head coach Mike Vrabel spoke with the media via Zoom call, and it was the GM who talked first.
Unique set of circumstances for all of us. Appreciate you guys taking the time to jump on this call here with us and try to kind of talk to you a little bit about our preparation and what we've done to date to get ready for the draft this weekend. Super excited about all the work that's gone into it from our scouts, from our coaches, navigating a different set of circumstances that none of us have really ever dealt with, but excited about the opportunity to build our football team with some players over the weekend. You know, Coach Vrabel and his staff have done a great job. Ryan Cowden, John Salgi, all of our scouts have done a great job with whether it was in meetings or getting information on players, getting in contact with players. All that stuff has been really good for us. And we feel good about where we're at and excited to continue to build this football team and try to improve on what we were able to accomplish last year. With that,
Yeah, John. Teresa Walker has a question for both of y'all to start it off.
Fire away, Teresa. Raves, I think you're muted, so
Took me a second to unmute. For John, at this point, there were reports of a draft run through this morning. Did that take part, and how did it work for your end?
Yeah, so it's this afternoon. We're going to work through that. You know, as soon as we get off the call here, we've got IT here is at my house now, just finalizing some phones and some computers, making sure we have everything from a tech standpoint, and looking forward to going through that this afternoon with the league and the other 31 teams to make sure that we're all on the same page.
Has there been any talk in prepping for the draft for contingency for if preseason games, regular season games get moved, games without fans at this point?
Not to my knowledge, Teresa. You know, we're kind of at the mercy of the league there. They'll dictate and you know, kind of divulge that information if that is in fact the case when they see fit.
And for Mike, hope you're doing well as well. I'm good. You might want to work on that backdrop for Thursday night. I'm just saying.
What do we got? We got the grease board here. We're working football, Teresa.
It's all white from here is all I'm saying. But for a more serious point, are you all able to get started with your off-season program virtually? Is that start? You know, you had originally been scheduled to start today. Are you able to start that yet, or where's that in the process of?
Yeah, we're anticipating that we'll be off and running on the 27th. We had two choices. Returning coaches had two choices of the 20th or the 27th. Could go 3 weeks. And so we thought instead of having a week off and starting on the 20th, we're just going to start on the 27th and kind of go straight through. And at that point in time, just would take it one day at a time, try to focus on some positive learning and really get our guys you know, brought back up to speed on the things that we've changed and the things that we're going to continue to remain consistent at.
We got a question from Jim Wyatt for John.
Hey, Jim.
John, how you doing? I want to ask you about this year's draft and maybe how the strengths of it match up with the needs for your football team.
Yeah, you know, I talked about it before a little bit at the combine, but have you know, having been able to kind of dig through these position groups, we feel like there's players really across the board that there's depth at certain position groups. Some positions are a little more top heavy maybe than others, but you know, feel like we've got some players identified really that we think. I mean, you never know once the draft unfolds where guys are going to go, but we feel like there's guys in all the rounds that we can, you know, that we'll look to try to add to help the football team.
And looking at the draft a little further, is there what positions would you say the draft is maybe the deepest?
Well, I think it's been widely talked about this, the receiver group. You know, they come in all shapes and sizes. There's big physical receivers. There's smaller, faster guys. There's the crafty route runners. There's guys with they're good with the ball in their hands. You know, I think the O-line group's got some depth at it. I think the D-line group has some depth at it. I think there's some runners. There's pretty good depth there, and there's some length and size in the secondary.
John Glennon had a question for both John and Mike.
Morning, John.
John, how are you?
Good, man.
Good, good, good. I know you just talked a little bit about the depth there, but I wonder how unusual is it to have such a strong crop of tackles this year? It seems like they're becoming increasingly rare. And does that possibly make it any more likely that you go after one early this year because you don't know, you know, what next year's crop or future crops might look like at that position?
Yeah, that's a position group. There's this is kind of a unique draft here where you've got several guys at that position that we feel can step in and help our football team and help a lot of football teams in the league. And those guys, those big guys, they're not walking around Walmart or Target. Like they don't come around very often. You know, we'll see kind of how the draft unfolds and see where that position group, when we're on the clock, if there's a player there, how he stacks up to another player at a different position possibly. and then make a call on it. But you're right. It's kind of a, I don't know if it's a unique year for that position group, but it's certainly a year where there's really good depth with good players at it.
Let me toss one more at you on the draft there, if I could.
Sure.
The cornerback class, wondering if you guys would like or look very closely at someone who could step in and play slot immediately, how much that factors into a possible cornerback guy with the chance that Logan Ryan doesn't come back.
Yeah, I think, I think we always talk about position versatility and the ability for guys to play a couple different spots. And we feel like there's some players in that corner group that can play inside corner. I mean, there's a lot that, you know, that Mike puts on those guys' plate. We've spent a lot of time with several guys in that position group, just seeing if they're going to be able to handle the mental component that's asked of that position group. And there's certainly guys in that category that we think have versatility to play on the outside and play on the inside.
And one for Mike also, please. Mike, with the trade of Jarrell, wondering how much of an urgency do you feel to add another, you know, high quality D lineman, or on the other hand, I guess, do you think Simmons has filled that spot and that it's not a huge priority at this point?
I got you, John. I don't know if Braves is frozen, maybe.
He was stunned by the question.
Shock and all.
Do you want to go ahead and answer that, John? Or
yeah, I can speak to that. Not to speak for Mike, but yeah, I mean, I think Simmons has played there. He played there in college. He played there some for us last year. So, I feel pretty good. Certainly, if there's somebody there that we think improves that position group, and we like them maybe better than players at another position group, then we won't hesitate to take a D lineman. Again, I love those big guys. I don't think you can ever have enough offensive and defensive linemen, those lines of scrimmage. That's where it all starts. But feel really good about the position group that we have with Jeffrey, with Daquan, with adding Crawford and having Mac back and Dickerson and Ivy and those guys. Feel like we've got really good competition, you know, across the board at those spots.
As we wait for Mike to get back, Joe Rexroad had one for John.
Hey, Joe.
Oh, there we go. Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, man.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to ask you about, of course, Jadeveon Clowney, if there's anything you can tell us about where that is right now. And then also, correct me if I'm wrong, but you haven't really had a draft before where you had a guy like that sort of in the mix still, correct? I mean, you know, a potential pursuit of someone that could obviously significantly change your roster and your payroll going into a draft. And how does that impact how you approach this?
Yeah, I think like with anything, you have to have a couple scenarios mapped out. And, you know, I would say that, and I talked about it last week with a couple of the TV spots, that, you know, we haven't closed the door on anything, but I would say that we really haven't inched closer to having any finality to that either. I mean, he's obviously a good football player, and I think where we're at, depending upon who we pick, could potentially impact that. But I would say it doesn't close the door on it completely either. Again, like I said last week, you don't ever close the door on the, you know, potentially adding good football players to your team. So we'll just kind of take it how it goes, and probably circle back with that one here this week or next week once the draft's over.
Thanks, man.
Gentry had a question for John.
Yeah. Hey, John, I'm curious.
Hey, Gentry, how we doing, man?
Good. I'm curious about the logistics of how things are going to work on draft night for you. Or I assume you're on a call with the people who would normally be in your own room. How difficult is it going to be for other teams to reach you? And I guess every team's going to kind of be dealing with that same thing.
Yeah. So we're going to have a couple of different, things in place here. That's why I've got three surfaces and an iPad on my desk here. But I'll be in one kind of channel, if you will, and a video conference call with our typical draft room participants. And then there'll be another, web conference call that I'll have with the scouts on another kind of channel. And then we have a couple different ways of communicating with the league. And I have my draft phone and my cell phone, which is kind of standard operating procedure. We'll run through it today. We did a kind of an internal mock last week with our scouts and with our draft room, and it went pretty well. You know, we've got a couple of documents that we've got to have, and being able to manipulate that, whether it's the draft board or who's picking who, we've kind of assigned people to that, that they will work that. They'll be able to hear who gets selected, and they can make adjustments on the draft board, or if there's a trade, make adjustments to our picks board, so that I can see, who's picking when and who's been taken. And I'll have, direct communication with Coach Vrabel, everybody that's in the draft room, and our scouts as well.
If there's any aspect of this draft that concerns you the most, just in terms of logistics and what you might be able to do, what is it about this year that concerns you the most?
Well, I think my biggest concern was the ability to make trades, and how that was going to go off. I think that I feel a little bit more at ease now that we've got the draft phone set up. And there's a lot of trades that get done via cell phone. Like sometimes, like in typical draft years in the past, where I'll text, another GM and say, hey, are you going to pick here? Would you be looking to move? And they'll text me back. And I don't want to say you consummate a trade via text, but you at least get the ball rolling that way. And then you pick up the phone and call. So I think that style of business with being able to move around on the draft board, we'll still be able to do that.
Paul had a couple questions for John.
Hey, John, how much?
Hey, morning, Paul.
Good, thanks. How many guys did you get to the facility for a visit before things were shut down?
10.
10? So you feel pretty good about a third? You think that's about what most teams did? You have access to that information, right?
Yeah, I think we may have been a little, may have had a few more than some teams, but I think there was, that as we started to talk to prospects, on FaceTime or on Zoom calls, there were several that were able to make trips as well. Certainly missing the pro days, the private workouts, and those other, 20 guys, you would obviously love to have gotten all of that accomplished. But, we're all kind of fishing in the same pond, for lack of a better term. And it's the kind of the cards we've been dealt, and we've been able to navigate it and feel pretty good about where we're at.
Does that include locals, or are you talking out of town?
Yeah, we didn't do the local. I mean, we typically have our local day. We would have had it last week and or in early April, where we would have brought those local guys in for the local day and worked out some of them, some of the more high profile players. We just bring them in if they're in town and they visit with us. But that we were not able to get the local day worked in.
How much do you have to think about contract status of Jonnu, Daquan, and Jayon as you draft here? Or do you think optimistically about your ability to extend guys you want long term?
Yeah, I think, right now our focus is on the draft, and making sure we try to come away with next weekend with a bolstered roster and some good players on our team. And there's guys on our team who we'll circle up with, once the draft is over, once we get into training camp, like we've done in the past, with like KB, for example. He got done last year in training camp. So or Ben Jones, whoever it may be, just to pick two examples there. There's time to work through all of that in the future.
I know this mock is scrambled. What number pick do you have, and do you know who they're having you take?
We have been advised, Paul, not to disclose any of this information, so I'll have to plead the fifth on that one.
Mike, do you want to be a rebel on that and share?
I don't even, I get a million emails from them. So they just tell me to be ready to go at noon. So that's what I'm going to do. Be ready to go at noon.
Thank you both.
Jane Slater had a question for Mike.
I'll just ask this to both of you guys. Hi, Jane Slater, NFL Network, new to the beat. So thanks for doing this. Question for you about not obviously getting those guys in there for a workout. Is it a good or bad thing that there's a more heavy reliance on the tape? And are you at all concerned about some of the medical aspects of this? And is the league protecting you in any sense, given the circumstances?
As far as for bringing them in to work out, the only guys we would be able to work out would be our local guys potentially. But the medical is extremely important. I mean, that's an important component when you're making a decision on a player. So we're relying heavily on, you know, the combine players and the guys that weren't able to go to the combine. Our training staff and our doctors have done an extreme amount of due diligence in talking with trainers and that have dealt with these prospects at their respective universities and trying to get as much medical information as possible and grading them accordingly.
I think the tape is something from the coaching perspective that we always look at as far as the coordinators or the position coaches or the head coach in my perspective. Is what we try to rely on. We're not scouts, we're coaches. And so I think we rely on the tape and the interview and would we like to bring this guy, would we like to coach this guy and have him in our room is something that from a coaching perspective, we rely heavily on our evaluation as we talk with John and his department.
You know, just to follow up that real quick, I did talk to one prospect and he said the one thing that he wishes he had with the virtual chats was something as simple as the strong handshake. Are you guys getting a sense of these players in those virtual chat room that you would typically get face to face? What's been lacking and what have you gained from the virtual chats?
I would think they've been great. I think John and I have enjoyed them. I think we've really probably taken that to something where we had an opinion of a player or we thought about a player and then you meet with them for 30 or 40 minutes and you really get a sense of, do you want this guy to represent your organization? And do you want to work with him on a daily basis? So I think that those have been really good to help build a profile of the player.
And I would echo that, you know, we some of the guys that we talked to at the combine, we circled back with, and it's 18 minutes. It was 18 minutes this year per prospect. And I mean, these guys have a lot going on, whether it's medical or they're downstairs with what we call the train station interviewing with, you know, five or six teams in a row. And they've installed 48 plays over the course of 3 hours with the guys. And they're kind of their heads swimming a little bit. So when they come into your room, they're trying to make an impression on you, but they've just got so much on their plate. And there's some guys that, you know, may not have passed that test in Indy or, you know, not fully passed it. But we've been able to jump on calls with them and get to know them a little bit better in their setting and had a little bit better impression of them.
There you go. That was half of basically the Zoom call with head coach Mike Vrabel and general manager John Robinson with the media, the local media here today. Wanted to hear some of that before we talk with TD. Teron Davenport to kick off the final hour of this Monday edition of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.